Darren.
David.
Shit, bro, you're alive.
Yeah, I sure am. I've been here the entire time.
Really? Right here?
Look, okay, how much time do we have? Because I can get into this.
No, we've got about 45 seconds.
Okay, well, let's not do that. But you know what I think we should get into?
What should we get into?
Is who we spoke to the other day.
Well, you know what? I know who that is.
You tell me.
It was Adam Sparks.
Oh, Adam Sparks, yeah. Sparks Brewery, man. Yeah. They are knocking out some amazing beers.
Some really interesting beers, I find. Yeah, yeah. Not your normal sort of traditional beer.
Exactly, and that's what makes stuff interesting. And I'm sure there's a lot more interest in the podcast to follow.
Right, well, should we listen to it?
Yeah, let's do it, man.
Let's do it.
Okay, so here we are with Adam Sparks from Sparks Brewery at the wonderful Galbraiths on a shitty spring day. Welcome.
Oh. Cheers, guys.
Awesome. Hi, Adam. Good to see you again.
Yeah, you too.
Why don't you tell us about Galbraiths, why we're here, what it means to you?
Well, Galbraiths was the first spot that got me into beer, really, in the late 90s and early 2000s. We'd come down here and get our fill of Pilsner.
Pilsner, was it?
Yep. Right. Yep.
Not the ales, that wasn't the...
I remember I wasn't too fussed on the Bell Ringers and those, but they did have one called Resurrection. I'm not sure if that's still on.
Ah, that's the...
Comes and goes.
Like
Trappist.
Trappist style.
And looking back on it now, didn't taste very Trappist, but it was really strong. We liked it.
Right.
Because, you know, you'd have one of the two of those at the end of the night and you were good to go.
And it came in the nice fancy goblet.
Yeah, yeah. It did.
Still does.
Yeah. I haven't seen it for a while.
Every now and then something more extravagant would come along and a friend would get it and you'd all be sort of staring at it and having a taste and going, well, that's crazy. But it was the Bohemian Pilsner that, we really got stuck into. I just remember that being a significantly different beer to everything else I'd tried.
Yeah. So that was your first craft beer then?
I think so, yeah. And I remember at the time sometimes it was on and sometimes it was off and we couldn't pick what it was, but you know, even back then we were probably getting some variation in batches and or it would just, you know, it wouldn't be pouring. They'd just say, oh no, there's none here. I often look back and wonder what happened to that batch.
So paint us a picture, it's the late 90s you're saying, or?
Yeah, 98.
98.
I would have been, I guess 18 at the time. Yep. And then I did my last year of school in Denmark. And
right.
Then came back. I did a student exchange and then, came back and that's when we really sort of started getting stuck in the pub culture. And I think it was through our mutual friend Steve that he was really into pubs and, you know, pubs weren't a big thing for us, you know, young 20-year-olds back then. It was all about the waterfront and going down there to try and pull girls.
Yeah.
But, you know, that wasn't quite our scene. So we liked...
you come up here and try and pull a Pilsner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Nice. I know, yeah.
That was good, Dave.
Yeah, oh, thanks.
We might keep that one in.
Yeah, all right. cool. So you're at university and...
I worked for a couple of years and in a job I didn't really enjoy doing security, access control, and, you know, like magnetic locks on doors and things like that. And then I decided I'd had enough of that and I was a DJ at the time as well on my weekends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was really into drum and bass and electronic music, so I decided...
Who wasn't?
This is the late 90s. Yeah. Come on.
So I decided to go to university and I studied sound engineering and music production. And
awesome.
I just wanted to learn how to write music, really. I wanted to learn how to write all these great tunes I was hearing. And, did that for a number of years, finished that, and then worked for a friend's studio for a little while and then got a job with a place in Newmarket. Called VTR, and we were just doing television, really. It was sound engineering. It was exactly what I'd kind of trained to do, but not really what I wanted to do, but I ended up doing that for like 10 or 15 years.
So as long as it pays the bills, right?
Yeah, exactly. It seemed like a good career path. It was, you know, it paid all right. It paid really well towards the end, and I liked all the gadgets and the mixing desks and the process and balancing things, I think, as well. Like... sound is all about balance. I think beer's kind of similar, so I think that crosses over. Actually, when I started homebrewing, there was three other sound engineers in my homebrew group.
Cool. Well, so talk to us about starting home brewing. Like, when was that? Like, so you were...
Yeah, wife gave me a homebrew kit in 2010.
Right.
And
good old wives.
Yeah, good.
That.
Yep, copper ton kit.
Nice.
Yep. Usual story. Yeah. And just really got stuck into it. Did the kit first and then thought, oh, that tastes rubbish. And got straight into all grain.
Right.
Yeah, a chili bin and a pot. And started listening to... what's that podcast? God, it's just escaped
Brewers,
my mind.
The Brewers Network? Or
Brewers Network.
Yeah, right.
Yep, all of Jamil's.
Jamil, Bruce Strong.
Started going through all of them.
Yeah.
And then within a year, I'd got a gold medal at the National Homebrew Competition for a stout.
Awesome.
So just really got stuck into it. And that stout actually ended up becoming Outlander.
Oh, wow.
It's almost the same recipe from back then. Yeah, just loved it. There was stainless equipment just starting to pour out of my house, and it was getting a bit embarrassing trying to explain to people what was going on.
Meth.
Yeah. Everyone jumps to meth. I think meth would look completely different, but I'm not sure.
I'm not sure, yeah. I only know from Breaking Bad,
yeah,
obviously.
Exactly.
It seems to be a theme in the brewing world, doesn't it? It's like, we've got all the stainless equipment. Oh, that could be meth as well. So, well, no, it couldn't.
Yeah, I think lots of beakers look like vials and things.
So the jump from enjoying the pills here to making stouts and some of the best stouts you can get in the country.
Yeah, right. That's a fairly big leap, I guess, isn't it? So what happened in between there? Actually, I didn't... Yeah, I think I started... From there, it was probably Epic Pale Ale. Yep. And...
Cheers, Luke.
Yep. And I still wasn't massive into craft beer. I think actually the homebrew kit was what got me into it.
Right. Okay.
So I was still very much a Bohemian Pilsner drinker.
Yep.
I had tried some of those hoppy beers, and thought, wow, those are pretty intense. But it was very quickly after getting that kit, I got everything I could find and really got into it. And the hoppy beers and IPAs and pale ales, I was in love with them, as everyone is.
Yeah, for sure.
What is this flavor? And yeah, it just took off. I think within 2 years, it was all I was thinking about and all I was doing. And I was commuting into Newmarket from Papakura, an hour and a half on the motorway each way. So I just listened to these podcasts, every single one I could find, and every microbiology paper, and just tried to absorb everything I could get.
Yeah.
And after 4 or 5 years of that, and brewing, every week, you start to figure it out.
Yep.
Some nerdy tendencies there, maybe.
I use totally nerdy. Obsessive, in a good sense, compulsive.
Right.
I'm like borderline ADHD. When I'm focused on something, I'm hyper focused on it. The other flip side of that is that there can be like my life can be in chaos and ruins behind me if I'm just paying no attention to anything else.
But the water chemistry, though,
yeah,
is spot
everything's
on.
Just perfect. I worked through everything. I was just like, right, I've nailed that onto the next thing, and got water test kits and started titrating my water and going down to see the local water guys down at Ardmore and talking to them. And,
yep.
Awesome.
And just absorbing it all.
So this is in 2010.
Yeah.
More or less.
No, this would have been about 2013, 2014.
Right. Because it seems like that's relatively easy stuff to do these days with the equipment that's available from the the various sort of brew shops and stuff. But it must have been hard to get everything you needed back then, right?
Oh, the equipment was, it was only just starting to surface. But you didn't need a lot, I mean, you can make amazing beer with a chili bin and a pot.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I
that's true. Did
or once. Just a pot and a bag. I think I did brew in a bag, actually. I think I did that after I had a chili bin. And then I got a pot and a bag, because brew in a bag wasn't very popular when I started, and then it started to become something in 2012. This Australian started to really get stuck into it.
And
I tried everything from no chilling or wort and got onto realbeer.co.nz and stuck into the forums.
Thanks, Luke, again.
Cheers, dude.
What a service.
Started building stuff and collecting bits and pieces. And
What did the wife think about all this? They've got to always ask.
I think she was just happy that something moderately constructive was happening after... I don't know, being into dance music for a long time, you end up in some unsavory situations.
Right.
Yep.
Enough said, I think.
Yeah. I think she saw it as like a nice constructive way to, steer my attention towards something.
Right. Yep. Cool.
And she just knew me. She knew I'd get stuck into it. Like I've been cooking all our food for, the last 10 years.
Right.
I love flavors. I just love trying to figure things out. You know, if I go to make a margarita pizza, I'll cook it for the next 3 weeks just trying to get it perfect.
Yeah.
You know, and until it just tastes like how I had imagined it in my mind.
Yep.
So I think she saw that. She's like, "Oh, you'll get a kick out of this."
That's very obsessive. But you know, if you don't mind me saying, like,
well, not every night, but I will. I'll just, you know, I'll. Yeah, yeah, it's a bit psycho.
I think I get that as well. So you know, you're in good company, I think. So homebrewing. When did you go? Okay, I think that you know you had a successful job that was relatively well paid. What, yeah. When did you go? Shit, I think I'm gonna throw it all away and become a brewer.
Kind of a lot of things happened at once. I was set to buy the business that I was working in.
Yeah,
it was the 2IC there, and. We're coming up to some big life changes, and my wife got pregnant.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but we decided that would be a good time to start a brewery.
that's interesting. We, very similar story, wife got pregnant, I quit my job and started my own company. It's like, what are you thinking?
Why? Yeah.
I don't know,
what is that that happens in your brain? But yeah. I think you just feel like, wow, maybe now's the time for change. There's this huge change coming, so let's just ride that wave.
Yeah, man.
Throw in a few more changes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like quadruple change. Perfect. So you quit the job, and then talk to us about the start of Sparks.
Yeah,
I kind of
left my job. So I registered the brewery in 2013, actually.
Right.
We brewed our first beer in 2014, but I was still working for my company. So we brewed a batch of Outlander down at Scott's, and at the time there was nowhere in Auckland to brew. There just weren't enough breweries, and they were all at capacity. 2012, 2014 was just like a gold rush for those guys. Like, they were just making so much beer, and the industry was just cranking. There was not a lot of competition. So they were all at capacity, and I read this article that the guys who owned Scott's and Waitakere's had moved down to Oamaru.
Right.
My parents actually lived in Alexandra, so I just called them up and said, "Hey, you know, I hear you've got a brewery down there. It's new. Have you got any space?" And they're like, "Yeah, come down."
Sweet.
So I just went down and met them and got on, and mostly the relationship, I think, after that was kept me brewing there. That's kind of how I've let my business guide me since then, is just, you know, work with good people.
Are they still a brewery, Scott? I don't.
Yep.
You're right. Yeah, I don't know.
They have tasting room down there. They make some really nice beers. They started as a gluten-free brewery.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yes, I have. Yeah.
Their gluten-free pale ale is pretty well distributed around the country. And he actually had the 600-litre system that Black Sands have got. And Weasel Dog, they ended up buying that.
Right.
So he built that, and had his family, had a little girl there. They were sleeping in the brewery and like compressor above the bedroom, and like it sounded crazy. So I think they moved down and set up a 2,000-litre brewery and you know, expanded from there.
Yeah.
And I got their gluten-free pale ale and just tasted it, and I didn't really like it, but I could taste that it was fresh and the hops were just really bright. And I looked at the bottle date and it was 6 months on there, and I was like, okay, you guys are doing something. You know what you're doing. You know, packaged beer. And he had a Mahin, which is like the worst machine in the industry. If you talk to any brewer that's used a Mahin, they'll just swear incessantly.
What is a Mahin?
Oh, it's this little six-head filler. And it's just this total balancing act of pressures and temperature to get the beers fobbing and filling right. And
right.
Pretty much your beers are always oxidized when they go through there.
Right.
Oh, but I don't know. Phil Scott just managed to nail that machine. And the first beer we made on there won a gold at the New World Beer and Cider Awards the next year in March.
What was the first beer?
Outlander.
Oh, right. Cool.
Yeah, sweet.
I launched that stout in summer. By the way,
everyone loves a good summer stout.
Which was a bit crazy at the time and really hard to sell.
Yeah.
Auckland was not ready for it. The first place we sold a keg of that to was the Lumsden, actually. Lucy at the Lumsden was really into stouts, and I worked just down the road, so they were a massive supporter.
Right.
And then it just started getting traction. It's just, people just really started to enjoy it. And now it's kind of like the Auckland stout, really.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It's
a
delicious, delicious drink. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, loads of roast. And the recipe's almost the same. Like, you can still see the recipe on Real Beer, the original one. I originally called it Old School Biker Ale.
Right.
Here we go. Breaking Bad reference. I don't know where it is. What is it? And then shortly after that, I felt I needed to have a more drinkable beer because it was summer and it was tough to sell the stout. So for some reason, I made a farmhouse ale.
Which we're drinking now.
Oh, Prospect.
Just like hit after hit.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Which also turns out is a really difficult style to sell.
But people should buy it because it's delicious.
It's yeah, amazing. It just ticks all my boxes for a beer. It's low alcohol, reasonably sessionable. It's light. It's hoppy. It's got yeast.
Yeah.
And it's all in balance. None of those elements are sticking in your eye and getting in the way.
Near perfection in my mind. Oh, it's amazing. Yeah.
That's a big thing for me. Is balance is just that's what I'm all about, and I'm always searching for perfect balance with my beers. So none of them are really loud. And have many hooks in them. They're just really well balanced beers.
I think that's an interesting point. I mean, there's a lot of brewers and brewing companies who are making these big, shouty beers, and that's good and well. You know, you throw tons of hops in a beer, people are going to buy that shit because it's hoppy and delicious. But something, a lot can be said for a well balanced beer, and I don't think there's enough of those.
Yeah, totally.
So, like, two thumbs up and cheers to that, man.
Hey, thanks, guys. I think it was a strategic decision as well. Like, I just wanted to put my best foot forward when starting the brewery, and I looked around at all the beers that were on the shelf, and they were all IPAs and pale ales, and that segment was growing like crazy, and it would have made sense to make pale ales and IPAs. I probably could have sold them, but I guess you're competing with all these other breweries, and I'm tasting them all. I was talking to Luke Nicholas back then and tasting his beers and getting tips from him, and I just didn't see how I could compete with that. I knew that those beers were only good for, like, you know, 3 or 4 months, and then it's all downhill.
Yeah.
And I was terrified of putting, you know, 12 grand into a batch of beer and then 4 months later not wanting to sell it myself or having to sell it and ruin my brand. So I knew a stout would last. So that's what I made first. And that first batch actually did take 12 months to sell. So So it was a good call. And Prospect is the same. It sits on the shelf really well. You know, 12 months later, the beer actually still tastes nice and there's still some yeast character there. The hops have pretty much dropped out, but you've still got something there that's interesting.
Oh, awesome.
So everything I've done has been to try and find these little niches of beers that would age, you know, a bit more gracefully, and I'd still be able to sell because, without the resources of salespeople and marketing budget, it's up to you to go visit all those stores, and that takes time.
So Sparks is a one-man band, as it were, right?
Yeah, well, it's me doing all that sort of stuff, but my wife is behind the scenes. She's got a design agency, Lightbox Creative.
Right.
And they've done all of our design over the years. So all of our website design, all of our brainstorming, all of our branding, everything is down to them. And they've just done an amazing job. Yeah, I can give them an idea and a flavor profile of a beer, and then they'll just pop out with a creative picture of that. I don't know if you've seen the repetition series that we did.
No, no. Tell us about that.
The repetition series is a session beer project that I launched, and the focus is beers that are sort of under 5% or 4%, and we've done an XPA and an English pale ale, and we've done a micro stout.
Right. Yep. I have seen some of those beers. I didn't realize it was a series.
Yeah, so that's kind of the whole impetus for it, is just to rinse and repeat, really. Make the batch. Once it's gone, move on to the next one, and it's beer that you want to drink a lot of. So you're going to want to have a few pints, and the keg's well priced because it's low alcohol, so the whole thing is just about drinking lots of beer.
Was that stout the one that won the
Brothers
Session?
I got the People's Choice, I think.
Right,
And it was called Social Reality, and then I brewed it earlier this year just to fit into the repetition series.
Right.
Yeah, and tweaked it a bit, made it a bit more roasted.
That's like a 4% or
3.6.
3.6.
Yeah. That was a delightful.
It actually, it just won the New Zealand Stout Championship.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Championship, is that what it's called? New Zealand Stout Competition?
I know what you mean.
Yeah, down in Christchurch.
Yeah, yeah,
there's 16 breweries down there up against, you know, Parrot Dog and all those guys. And big stouts, big imperial stouts, barrel-aged stouts, you name it, and a 3.6% stout one. I sent it down. I was like, I said to Punky Brewster down there, because they distribute our beer, it's never going to win, mate. It's never going to win.
And
just kudos to the judges. They judged within the styles and
beautiful.
Yeah, they liked the balance of it. So it does drink really well. It tastes like a big beer, but it's
a delicious beer. Yes. So to talk to us. So at Scott's, you've done one of the stout, and then the farmhouse. How long did you keep? Are you still brewing down there, or
no? So what did we do? We did a batch of stout, batch Prospector, and then a March. Prospector won champion European Ale at the New World Beer and Cider Awards, and Outlander won a gold as well. So they got both got golds.
Yeah,
and Foodstuffs cleaned us out of all our stock, and then we quickly brewed another batch to keep that going. And then shortly after I moved up to Christchurch.
Yeah.
Right.
It was just getting a little bit difficult to fit into Scott's schedule. They were getting quite busy.
Mm-hmm.
Brewed out a stainless brewing company down there for a while, which is Bear Baroness.
Oh, yes.
Yep. And Southpour as well.
Right.
Brew out of there. I don't know if you've tried those beers. They're all really good.
Bear Baroness, yes, not Southpour. I don't think
yeah, Southpour's really good. Cam's the brewer down there, and that's his brand.
Right. I feel like sometimes those Christchurch beers don't make it up here, I think.
Oh, a lot of them don't. It's really tricky to distribute beer up here. And Christchurch has a really good local scene.
They just
the local bars just really consume a lot of the local breweries' beer.
Right.
And nice. With good reason. It's all really good.
Yep.
I worked there for a while. We brewed our next beer down there, Reverence, which was a Belgian blonde.
Yeah.
And that's a 6.4% classic Belgian blonde done with... I started using a wheat yeast in that, but it got a little bit sulfury, and then I moved to the Baston, White Labs Baston yeast.
Right.
Shortly after, I probably brewed there for 6 months, I think, and then moved up to... we did a batch of stout out of 8-Wired.
Right.
Yep.
Up in Warkworth?
Yep.
Right, yeah.
Cool.
And that batch actually picked up Champion Stout at the New World Beer and Cider Awards the following year. Yeah, so it was just like working with really, really good breweries and really good people. And
yeah, for sure.
I think focusing on the water makes a difference as well.
Right.
Like when you're brewing in all these different locations, it's it has a big impact. You definitely start to taste... you know, the changes in your beer.
Yeah.
So I'd just try and get a local report as best I could. Christchurch was really difficult because all their water's just drawn from all over the place.
Right.
Yeah.
Auckland is much easier. And after working at 8-Wired, I decided I was just going to stay in Auckland. It was really nice being able to drive up there and check on the beer.
Yeah.
I lost a batch of beer down at Stainless. I had to dump a batch of Reverence.
No.
Just because we pitched some yeast that wasn't healthy and I didn't taste it. I wasn't there.
Right.
And it just sat too long in a keg. And
bummer.
Yeah. And that stuff keeps me up at night. I don't want to have to do that. I just, so I want to be able to drive out and taste the beer. AY was just a little bit too big. They're 5,000 litre batch. So I ended up then having a conversation with Steve Plowman, and I've been at Hallertau ever since.
Right, okay.
They're really close and just love the team out there. We're all just totally on the same page. And that's where we've been brewing since.
I think we've dabbled on your beers a little bit there, but why don't you just quickly just run us through the lineup?
Sure. So, we've got Outlander, Prospector, Reverence. I've just added another one to our range called Mystical Experience,
right,
which is a Belgian IPA.
Right.
It's a really nice beer. So that's only been out for the last month or so. And then the rest has been seasonal. So what else have I done? I have done one IPA called Bandwagon. I made that at Funk Estate.
Right.
Cool.
And it sold really well. It was a good beer.
Yep.
I brewed out of Funk Estate when they were in Greyland.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
And we've done a few collaborations this year. We've done one with Epic, an Imperial Stout.
Right.
Nice. Yes.
Which was awesome. That's a career highlight for me. It's just got the most luscious mouthfeel to it. It'll age really, really well.
Yeah. I think I've seen that at my local, actually. It might still be knocking about in a bottle somewhere.
Yeah. It's all sold out, so we don't have any more to sell. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
pick
them up.
I'll see if I can find it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm, you mean the one down?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Don't say.
I might pass there on the way home.
And we did another collaboration with Birkenhead Brewing Company called IndieWit.
Oh, yes. I tried that. Right. Yeah, that was good.
I really like that beer. It's got a lot of Prospector character sort of going on.
Yeah.
Used a classic wheat yeast and lots of oats and wheat. Half of the grist was unmalted wheat.
Wow.
And that was done out of steam. And lots of Citra and Simcoe and Arnhem.
Right.
I just love that hop, Arnhem.
I've never used it.
Yeah.
They use it in Bunker. And when I tried their pale ale Bunker, I was like, what is that character? There's something there I can't put my finger on. It's like noble, it's classic citrus, Yakima kind of character. And it's Arnhem. It's just this really complex, beautiful hop. And it's one of the first hops that they were selling from the States.
Wow. Just write that down.
It's really, really nice. So when I tasted it, I was like, oh, that would just go great in a beer. And they said, we think a wheat beer would be awesome to make. A whip beer, classic Belgian wit.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to make a... I'm not a huge fan of adjuncts in beer, so I really wanted to get some of that orange and coriander spicy character from the hops and the yeast.
Yeah,
and
nice.
So we did some test batches and... yeah, my process is still much like if I was a homebrewer. I test everything on my kit and keep going until it's perfect and then scale it up.
Right, right. So that's interesting.
I very rarely push go on a batch,
yeah.
on a big batch of beer without testing it first.
Right, cool. Very rarely. You're still brewing at home?
Well, I've moved my kit into Epic's warehouse at the moment.
Okay.
So after we did that stout together, Luke and I just are really on the same page. We really into all the same beers.
Yeah.
He wants to make more of that sort of stuff, more of those kind of styles.
Interesting. Okay.
And I want to make bigger beers, but Imperial Stout was never something that was I was going to attempt to do because of the cost and selling it would just be take time, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
But they've got the sales channels and the reputation to move that sort of stuff. But mostly we just really are on the same page. We just really hit it off. I was selling my house, I still am, so looking for somewhere to go to put my gear, and he just said, hey, move it in, man, it'd be great if you come down here and just make beers and keep working, and then things have kind of developed and now I'm looking at sort of putting in a larger system down there. In Epic's warehouse down there.
This
secret location in Onehunga.
Right, yeah. I think we might have been there.
We did, yes. I can't remember where it is because I've got a terrible memory.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping around March things will sort of start to come to fruition down there.
Wow, that sounds cool.
Mm. So just quickly back to the beers. So four sort of core, I suppose, and then it sounds like loads of seasonals, right? Is that like something you're into?
Yeah, I really like the seasonal beers. I think... I've done things quite organically. I haven't had a huge amount of capital, so it's just been very slow and steady.
Really. Like sell some kegs, make some beer, sell some kegs, make some beer.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, more or less.
Yeah.
And then dealing with, all the bits and pieces in between and trying to store the beer has been a continued challenge.
Right. Not at your house, presumably.
No. And just trying to move it around, you know, Auckland has a major shortage of cold storage. So
right.
Now that we're actually working with Bear Teak and nice and close out of Epic's warehouse as well, because they're right next door.
Right.
It feels like a really nice fit at the moment.
Cool.
And so core range, seasonal range. People want to buy this beer. Where can they go? Like, so core range in New Worlds?
Probably not a lot of New Worlds at the moment. I think Mount Roskill, New World, you'd probably be able to find out Blonde, but we're very low on 500ml stock. That needs to go into production.
That's my bit.
They'll have that down there.
Right.
Liquorland New Market, obviously.
Right. Yes.
Always been massive supporters of us.
Yeah.
Fine Wine Delivery might have some.
Right.
Okay.
But most of it, to be honest, is keg beer.
But so generally, if people see it, they should buy it because they might not see it again for some time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, our supply has been patchy since we started, so it's and supermarkets don't like that.
Yeah, right.
So it has been a challenge, and unless you've got a lot of capital, it's really hard to keep everything in stock everywhere.
Right.
Across all the formats as well.
Yeah,
for sure.
So we've got 330 mils for Prospector, Outlander, Irreverence.
Yep.
And 500 mils in kegs, and most of our business is on premise.
Right. Okay. I see, because you get your beers in my locals quite a lot, so I feel privileged to be able to drink it reasonably regularly.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I think we might have just sort of skimmed on it or touched on it, but generally next what we try and talk about is, hopes and aspirations. You know, what does the future hold for Sparks Brewing? So why don't you talk to us about that for a little bit?
Yeah, what does the future hold for Sparks? I think I'd really like to make more Saisons, more of the Belgian IPAs, sort of touched on it. It's more or less a Saison, really, but it's too hoppy for the style. And I think those fusion beers are really, really cool. And I think they break down a little bit of barriers with people as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Saison can be a challenge for some.
Yeah.
But you add in those elements that people recognise and... they're more open to trying them.
Just put IPA in the title somewhere.
Yeah, effectively. Yeah. Just do that. I'd really like to do some bottle condition stuff or can condition stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd love to venture into sour beers and work on that, but that takes some space and time.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So definitely I'd like to do that. And I'd really like things to be a bit more hyper-seasonal for us.
Right, right.
So really have a good range of beers that we're just peddling each season.
Right.
So not constantly different seasonals, but... you know, just have certain beers for each season.
Yeah, right, oh, for nice. Sure.
I think our stouts...
Stouts for winter.
Yeah,
summer,
yeah.
Sorry, summer.
Yeah, obviously. And we're kind of... We've got a good rep now with the stouts where it's getting a lot easier to sell that stuff. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you are kind of like the stout guy.
I'm the stout guy.
Yeah.
It turns out. So that worked in my favour.
Did you know
pushing that beer.
Did you know you were going to be a stout guy? This is what you dreamed of being?
I'd make just stouts, I think. I'm amazed at what Guinness has done. Like, that's just an incredible world presence, isn't it? With one beer.
I mean, it's the only global beer, I think. Like Corona's probably close, but, you know, you go anywhere in the world and buy Guinness probably if you looked hard enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, totally. I think I just really want to keep finding these little niches that aren't being filled by other breweries
as well.
And just trying to bring those styles together and see what happens. I think people are definitely getting open to trying these sort of beers.
Yeah, for sure.
And I feel like if we just keep going, it's just going to open up even more. You know, you look what's happening in the States and they're probably, 10 years ahead of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are breweries just selling saisons, farmhouse ales, just doing one beer style. It's not something you really find in New Zealand. But I think it will get there. I feel like the industry's getting there and people's tastes are opening up a bit.
Yeah. Are they maybe a little bit more accessible, do you think, some of these styles? Or?
Definitely. I think so. They don't have the bitterness of the IPAs. So a lot of people that, especially when I'm at festivals, we did Taste of Auckland in 2015, I think. No, 2016. And the number of Pilsner drinkers that were down there, because we were on a wine stand.
Yeah.
We weren't in the beer lane.
Yeah.
We kind of cheated a little bit. Our distributor at the time was a wine distributor and they just put us on the side of their stand. And Taste got really pissed off and they banned us from the festival for 2 years because of it.
Oh, but it's 2018 now, though.
Yeah.
But triumphant return.
Come back and do it exactly again.
They have asked us to come back and I was tempted. Hey, let's go see that wine stand. But we had a lot of people coming down just getting wines and wanting a simple beer to get with their food, and Prospect, we just went through so many kegs of Prospect. They just loved it.
Yeah.
And I think it's the bitterness. I think you know, when people try IPAs for the first time, if they're lager drinkers, it can freak them out a bit.
Absolutely. Sure. Like, it can be confronting, right? And lots of friends that like, that stuff.
Yeah. So I think these beers definitely, and it always amazes me, like, it's taken a bit of hard work to get people onto these styles, but then Belgium, right, the entire country just
drinks
these beers.
Yeah.
Like,
is it the Belgians or is it the tourists? When I was there, it was a bunch of Americans, I think, drinking the Belgian beers. I presume there's some Belgian people drinking as well.
I passed through when I was young. I wasn't really into it enough to notice. I'd love to get back.
Yeah. I did it before I was that into it as well, but I did drink all the beers because I like drinking.
Yep.
I definitely foresee a road trip on the cards to Belgium to go.
I see the Kraftwerk guys are doing tours.
Yeah.
I can go with them. That would be awesome. Ooh,
yeah, that would be amazing.
They also make amazing beers. I did read the other day that Cantillon were considering moving their operation because they're finding it harder to brew over there.
To New Zealand?
To Sweden, I think, or Denmark, or Sweden, to Scandinavia.
Still no good to me.
To your backyard.
Yeah, perfect. Now we're talking.
Huge Sandringham Brewery on the way. Yeah.
So
that Sandringham flora is just, you know,
fauna
is just magic. Yeah, they the temperatures changes, they're finding it harder and harder. Their window for brewing is getting smaller and smaller.
Right.
And they don't want to chill their wort artificially, so that changes the way they make beer.
So magic wand can do anything you want.
Mm.
Seasonal beers. What else? Talk to us.
I'd still be doing, if I had $1 million, $10 million, $100 million, I'd still be doing what I'm doing now. I just would. Yeah, it'd be a little bit bigger, I guess. Where I'm heading, really, I'm doing exactly what I want. I just want to be exploring this kind of space of fusion beer styles and great stouts, and just keep pushing it. Really like to be barrel aging a lot of stouts and get stuck into mixed fermentations and try and bring a few disciplines together. You know, there's really excited about working with the distillery that's in Epic, a Hidden World distillery in there.
Yep.
Just talking with Anthony there, and he brings a totally different skill set, being able to swap these ideas and talk about things and, oh, what does this taste like when you put this into that barrel, and what's that ingredient taste like when you put a little bit of water in the gin, and, you know, it, these all sort of cross over, so I'm really excited to to push the boat out there and see where that goes.
Well, that sounds interesting and exciting, yeah.
Darren.
Yes.
What are you looking at?
I'm looking at your beautiful face.
Oh, good. It is quite beautiful. Adam, so, I mean, that's pretty much the core of what we'd like to cover. Is there anything in particular that you'd like to sort of, you know, the floor is yours. Yeah. Anything that you'd like to sort of share with the listeners?
I guess a big part of this whole thing for me has been homebrewing. So, you know, take a look at our website. Try the beers, send them to me, ask me questions. You know, when I was starting out brewing, that's what I did. And I just emailed brewers and asked them questions. And
I love the fact that you look at any bottle of your beer and the recipe is right there.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Totally. It's good and refreshing to see you being so open about that.
I feel like I'm at a point, and I have been for a while, where I could taste a beer and probably clone it. You know,
right,
relatively close anyway. So I don't think it's some great secret that, you know, needs to be protected. I think it should be shared. And so much of it is in the process that they're all going to taste different.
I mean, you said it yourself, right? You've moved around breweries and they all taste different. So
Totally. Focus on the details, you know. Water makes a difference. Salt in a stout is what makes a stout great.
Right, right. Okay. Ah.
25 ppm of sodium.
Cool.
And you can put salt in there, or you can use baking soda, which will buffer the mash.
Right, right.
Wow. Focus on these things. Focus on the chemistry. That makes a difference. I really enjoy this industry. I really like the creative people that are behind it. And, I couldn't be happier, really.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been awesome talking to you. Thank you so much for the beer.
Yeah.
Nice. Delicious, delicious beer. Really enjoying this prospect. I think we might have to have a few more.
I agree. Thanks, Adam. We're very excited to see what's coming in the future.
Cheers, guys.
Keep trucking.